Today, I have my first guest, Amanda Poling. She reached out to me on social media and said that she would like to share her story in hopes that connecting with other people who maybe have had the same experience could relate. Amanda, hi.
Hi, Jess.
We were just talking before we got started about how you've listened on other podcasts and you're from Indiana.
Yes.
From Bloomington. And you reached out and kind of shared your story very, very minimally with me. And I thought, okay, this is something that other people could benefit from and nothing that I could share. But if you want to go ahead and start, and you can start from the beginning, and I am learning, I want everybody to know, like I said, I know very few details of this, but you're going to share your experience and what you're doing to cope and to move through.
I met my husband in August of 2006. We were working together. At the time, he was married to another woman, and I was in a relationship with someone else. We just became friends. I wound up moving to Fort Wayne for a year. I was taking some classes at IPFW, working, and that's where my boyfriend at the time lived. When things ended, I moved back to Bloomington. My husband at that point was separated from his wife. They had tried marriage counseling and many different things. Nothing was going to work to save that situation. He had expressed some interest in me, mm-hmm. and I was not into it. I was very heartbroken at the time. My relationship had just ended. It was my first serious boyfriend. We were together for 2 years, that whole thing. So my husband was very persistent. For 6 months, he would send me notes every day. He would bring me breakfast and have it leave like sitting on my workstation when I got in first thing. Finally, I was like, okay, we can get coffee. And we were friends. We did coffee dates twice a week for a couple weeks. And then finally I agreed to go on a date with him. And didn't look back from there. That was kind of it. We got engaged 6 months after we started officially dating, which was really fast.
Yeah.
But we were engaged for 2 years before we actually got married. my husband was an amazing person. Everyone says that about their spouse. He was very strong. He was the yin to my yang. I tend to be, I'd say your typical female that I want to cater to people. I want to take care of people. Mm-hmm. I put everybody else first and kind of myself second. He knew when to tell me to stop. He knew how to balance me out and to be kind of firm with me when I needed it, you know, because mm-hmm. sometimes I want to fight back.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
So we were married for 8 years. In November, my husband, November 11th, had a massive heart attack. I should also say he has a son from his first marriage, Lucas. I call my bonus baby. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's like my kid. Mm-hmm. He's 19 and he's a freshman at IU.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My husband and I also have a 2-year-old son together. His name is Aiden. So on November 11th, Lucas was home for the weekend. He just wanted to come home and spend the weekend. I had bought tickets for Tim and my brother-in-law to go to the Colts Steelers game. He's a huge Colts fan, or I'm sorry, Steelers fan. My brother-in-law is a Cowboys fan. We were watching movie Saving Private Ryan, mm-hmm. all of us as a family, and Tim kind of got up and was pacing a little bit, acting a little abnormal. The day before, he had complained that he was having a little chest pain, but we all had colds. He thought it was indigestion, kind of chalked it up to that. No mm-hmm. big deal. He kept getting up, kept pacing around. I was like, are you okay? He's like, oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. Are you sure you're okay? He was the kind of guy that would never go to the doctor for anything. Mm-hmm. He wore it like a badge of honor. He hadn't been to the doctor in 20 years and for anything. I had made him go for the first time in 20 years a couple months before because he had gotten insect bites. We were hiking in the woods and they got infected and it was a whole thing. But that was the first time and he was just so proud of that. And I was like, that's not something to be proud of, not going to the doctor. Like, you never know. So he kept pacing, drinking water a lot. He decided to take some Benadryl and try to lay down. We went to bed around 9 o'clock. He kept kind of getting up and pacing a little bit. Finally, around 10:30-ish, he went upstairs. I laid there for a little bit, and I was like, well, he hasn't come back down. I went upstairs, and Lucas was putting his jacket on. That's his son. I said, what's going on? He said, well, Dad's having chest pain, and it's in his jaw right now. I talked to my mom, and she said he needs to go to the hospital. His mother is an ER nurse.
Okay, okay.
And Lucas said, well, I'm going to take him. I said, no, you're not. I'm going to take him. Mm-hmm. Stay here with your little brother. Mm-hmm. We got in the car. We drove. Tim walked himself. He was talking. We got down the road probably 5 minutes. I kind of live out by Lake Monroe, so I'm a little bit out there.
Okay.
My husband started seizing in the car. He became unresponsive completely. I just kept talking to him, saying, stay with me, babe. I love you. I'm here with you. Please just stay with me. By the time I got to the ER, he had been unresponsive for about 9 minutes. Mm-hmm. They were able to bring him back, but he was completely gone. Once they got him stable enough, they rushed him up to the cath lab. They put a stent in, and they put him in a medically induced coma. They decided to try a newer procedure called Arctic Sun, where you chill your whole body temperature.
I've heard this.
For 24 hours.
Right.
And then you rewarm over 24, and then you start bringing him out of the coma. The thought is to prevent swelling and to help maintain brain activity.
Okay.
So we were kind of in a standstill. They were very hopeful. My husband is only 45. He was in pretty good shape. If you would look at him, he looked completely healthy. Mm-hmm. He did smoke a pack a day. but they were hopeful. They thought things would be fine.
No, take your time. Take your time.
So they did the 24 hours cold, 24 hours rewarming. They started pulling back on the medicine that was putting him in the coma. And they said that his brain activity wasn't right. He was just repetitively having seizures, and it wasn't stopping.
Oh, wow.
You could see his eyes were just twitching, and it was just one seizure after another after another. And the neurologist said he would have no kind of life at all. That was on.
Now, is that common when you have a heart attack, that seizing?
No. Okay. That happened because he was gone for so long before they brought him back. It caused brain damage.
Right.
Because there was no oxygen or anything getting to his brain.
Okay.
I was asked on November 13th if I wanted to make my husband a DNR. I never thought I would be in that position. I'm 32 years old. At the time, I was 31. And then they started asking me if I wanted to make him an organ donor, and of course I did.
Yeah.
So I had to make the call to yes, if he was going to have no quality of life, if he was never going to live off of life support, what do you do? Mm-hmm. You know, what would he want?
And you guys had never had this conversation.
No.
Yeah, so you had to make the call on your own.
Yes. So they kept him alive for till November 15th so they could get organ donors lined up.
Right.
Because it's a pretty fast process. Mm-hmm. So on November 15th at 3:08 p.m., my husband passed away. And my entire world shattered. How was I going to tell my son? How do you explain to a two-year-old that daddy's not coming home anymore? And Lucas, he's 19. He's a freshman in college. He shouldn't be dealing with this either. I'm a 32-year-old widow. With a 2-year-old son.
how, you know, I'm trying to deal with how do you move on past that? My whole life has changed. Like, it's hard for me to even take a shower, you know? That was Tim. Tim would watch him while I took a shower. Tim was the fun one.
Right.
I am the analytical one. Tim is the one who plays toys. He does bath time and he makes him scuba dive. I have zero imagination. You know, I try, but it's not my strong suit. Tim would make up stories with his little animals. I go, oh, I'm a zebra. I'm from Africa. I have stripes. You know, I'm just not creative that way. On November 13th, after I made the decision that to take Tim off of life support, my son was staying at my parents' house while I was staying in the hospital, and I went home just to love on him. I just needed to be with him. Mm-hmm. And he said, Mama, where's Daddy? And he said, Daddy had a really, really big boo-boo. And he's really sick right now. And my son turned and he looked up and he said, there's Daddy. He's with Grandpa, which is my husband's father who has passed away. My son never met him. And in that moment, it's like I just knew. Like, Tim was already gone. Like, he I know he wasn't suffering. At least he was in a coma. He didn't know what was going on. I'm just trying to figure out, how do I support my son? How am I going to teach him how to be a man? How do I show him how to shave? How do I, you know, teach him how to play football? I don't know how to do these things. How do I have the sex talk with him? That was supposed to be Tim's job. He's a boy. I shouldn't have to do the... So my husband died on the 15th. My birthday is November 20th. I spent the morning of my birthday with the officiant for his funeral planning. We buried my husband on the 21st. We had Thanksgiving, our first Thanksgiving, on the 23rd, right after. Yeah. Lucas's birthday is December 5th. Our wedding anniversary is December 10th. My mother-in-law's birthday is December 20th.
Oh, wow.
Then you have Christmas, and you have New Year's. So all of our really big firsts were so soon after he passed. And I'm still reeling from all of it. I still don't know how to deal with it. It still feels like he's going to walk through the door, even though I know he's not. I never thought my house was very big, but it feels so huge, and it feels so empty without him there.
You're talking a lot about the things that you're going to, those moments that you have to have with Aiden and teaching and doing and those types of things. And if at any moment you think that I'm like, this is something I don't want to talk about, please. But in you saying I'm constantly concerned with everybody else and I put everybody else first. And like, obviously you would as a mother, that's what you would do with your son. But what have been some of those firsts for you? I know the holidays and birthdays, but those daily first moments where you were like, oh.
In the summertime, my husband and I sleep downstairs because it's cooler. And then in the wintertime, we sleep upstairs in our bedroom. I was going to move, because it's the time to switch, our bedside table upstairs, and it completely fell apart. And of course, I'm cussing and I'm frustrated because I'm like, what do I do now? I have to go buy a new table. So I go and buy a new bedside table. And I have to completely put it together myself. And I'm like, Tim was so handy with that. He would put it together without looking at the instructions, and it would be perfect. I was sitting there with a million pieces just spread out, and I was like, how do I do this? How do I put this together? It took me probably an hour. That should have been probably 15 minutes. But I put it together, and I felt like he was there with me, you know? I was like, okay, remember he said that you don't tighten it up all the way. You put the screws in, but don't tighten it until you make sure everything lines up properly, and don't go across, go diagonal. And that was like the second week after he had passed away, and Aiden and I stayed at my parents' for 2 weeks to adjust. And it was like the second day we were home, and I was just like, crap. Aiden's bath time. That was a whole new thing. Tim, they made potions together in the bathtub, and you know, I tried. I'm not very good at it. I keep buying him more things for bath time, thinking he can occupy his own time. And
yeah,
bath crayons have been really big lately.
Right, right.
The first night I had to sleep in our bed was terrible. I still don't sleep well at night. I take melatonin now every night to help with that. My son just, he's got ear infections right now. So the first time dealing with a sick baby alone has been difficult because Aiden is very clingy when mm-hmm. he's sick. So putting him down is just not even an option. And trying to cook while you're holding a sick baby is not really possible either.
Right.
So that's been interesting, but we're making it through that and giving him his medicine. I think probably the worst thing that's been is just trying to explain to Aiden. He's two, so he's in that stage. He doesn't ask you a question once. He asks you 50 times in a row, even though you keep giving the same question. And I don't know which is worse, him asking 50 times or the days that he doesn't ask at all, where daddy is. And I realize right. he's starting to forget. And I don't want him to forget, but I know that he will. He's too young to retain. And when he asks, I'm getting a lot better, but I try not to cry in front of him. I don't want him to be afraid when he's older to ask me about daddy, because it makes mommy sad.
Right.
But when he just keeps asking and asking and asking, where's daddy? Where's daddy? He had a big boo-boo. Well, when's he coming home? Well, he's in heaven. Well, when's he coming home from heaven? I get to the point where I just find a distraction for him, mm-hmm. something else. Just, oh, do you want to watch Umizoomi? Do you want to go paint? Do you want to color? Just anything to get him to stop asking. And because I have him, he's a fantastic distraction if you want to go that route.
Right.
But it's also hard because I feel like I don't have the time on my own to grieve.
Mm-hmm. And not just your son, but Lucas, your bonus son, and I'm assuming his family, your in-laws. And
yeah, I'm very blessed to have amazing friends and an amazing family that are really supportive, but it's hard to talk to them because they're all hurting too. They're all grieving too. You know, it's the little things that people don't think about. When I went back to work, it's like everyone just stopped talking.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody gives you the same look, the head tilt.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay? Well, hell no, I'm not okay.
Right.
Don't ask me if I'm okay. But of course they say, I'm hanging in there. We're doing okay. I have a good group of friends, and I feel like I don't fit in with them really right now. They're all married couples, and, you know, for New Year's, I was with all of them, and they have so much love for me, my son. But it's like, I hate to say it, but I feel kind of hateful, and I feel jealous and angry, because I'm like, why do you guys get to be happy and have your family, and I don't have that anymore. Half of me is missing. it causes physical pain. Sorry.
Do not apologize.
It's like, why does everybody else get to carry on like nothing happened when my world stopped? The brakes were slammed on. I didn't have a choice in this. But I don't have a choice to move on either. I have a son that I have to take care of. I don't get to stop.
Are you able to do anything? I know that self-care is a term that I feel like is really overused right now, but in your situation, is there anything that you are doing for you?
No.
No.
Because I am a working mom, I already have that mom guilt that right. I'm not with him all the time.
Right.
So as soon as I get off, all I want to do is go get my son and spend, you know, the 4 or 5 hours before he has to go to bed with him. You know, on the weekends, I've been gone all week, so I just want to spend time with him and do stuff with him. I'm blessed that, you know, my mom watches him. He doesn't go to daycare.
Oh, okay.
And because she has him all the time, I would feel terrible asking her to do anything outside of that. My mother-in-law watches him sometimes, too. Typically, she'll try to do Mondays, so my mom has a day off during the week. But she has to have help to watch him. She's a very little woman. Yeah. She weighs maybe 85 pounds, and my son is 40 pounds. You know, she can't pick him up.
Right.
So she has to have someone there with her. Mm-hmm. And the house, there's a lot of people that live there. There's a lot going on, and so it's not something that I typically try to leave him
not the first extra. Option. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I understand.
And outside of that, I have people I'm sure that would probably watch him for me, but
you're just not there yet. Yeah.
Not a place where I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
And I know everybody wants to help when they say that, but they all say that for, you know, the first couple weeks, and then now we're almost 2 months out and people stop checking and they stop asking, and I know that they care and that they love me. But I almost feel like they've forgotten already, even though I know they haven't. It just kind of feels that way, that I'm just kind of left on my own with Aiden. It's just the two of us. And Lucas.
He
still comes out, you know.
Yeah.
We still talk. And, you know, he was talking about next year. Originally, he was going to get a house with some friends and do that whole thing. You know, when everything happened, he's like, well, I'll just come and live with you and Aiden. And I told him, that's your decision. It's your house. This is always your house. Nothing changes there. But I don't want you to feel like you have to step into this role.
Right.
That's not your job. You're going to be a sophomore in college. You need to live that life. You need to do that. I don't want you missing out on experiences because this happened. Do I want you around? Yes, you need to be here for your little brother. You need to have that relationship with him. But I don't want you to feel like you have to step into this parental role because it's not your spot.
Right.
So I think he's off of that and not going to move it now. But he still comes out once a week-ish, spends a couple hours with Aiden and me, and I cook dinner, and it's always good days.
Do you feel like Lucas is able to help keep Tim's memory alive with Aiden?
Yeah, it's funny because Lucas looks just like Tim, and so does Aiden.
Right.
They are replicas. Lucas, I know, has all these plans already. He's been telling me, well, I'll show him how to play soccer. And you know, Tim always took Lucas to the first IU football game of the year and the IU Purdue game if it was here. That was their thing. He's
right.
Like, I'll take him to the football games. We'll just keep doing that. But I know Lucas is going to move away in a couple of years. He doesn't want to stay in Bloomington. He wants to make movies. He's going to go to LA or New York or Chicago or something, you know. And I'm afraid that he's going to kind of fade away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's already such a big gap between him and age-wise, right. You know.
Kind of like an adult child does.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you have a younger sibling.
Yeah. And I don't want to lose that relationship.
Right.
Everything is just more difficult now. I don't know how to move past this. And I know with time it'll get easier and I'll have little victories here and there and I'll have days that are better than others, but boy, I'm not there yet.
Have you had one of those little victories yet? One of those things where you're like, I did this today. I'm sure even getting out of bed at one point was a victory.
Yeah, when I made it a full day through work, I was like, okay, I did it and I didn't cry while I was there today, so this is good. When I got the table together by myself, I was like, okay, I got this. Sorry.
Please, you're fine. Have you felt Tim's presence at other times?
Yes. I was doing laundry, and like a typical guy, every time I would bend over in front of my husband, he'd like smack my butt or whatever. He'd make some kind of comment. It was his thing. I was doing laundry and I was bending over, getting it out of the dryer. And I had just washed his coat and it's still hanging in my laundry room. And I don't know how, but the arm on it swung and hit me right on the butt. And I was like, babe, I know that was you. And there's times when like Aiden will do something funny and I'll turn and be like, babe, just, and I go to tell Tim what happened. And I swear, I feel like he's right there and like he saw it, you know. Or he heard whatever he said.
I'm really grateful that you're sharing this because I mean, I've had friends who have lost spouses. And I have been one of those people that fades away after a couple weeks. And I'll send an occasional text or, hey, do you want to hang out or do you want to do this? Or, I mean, I do all of the obvious things, the cooking, the meals, and, you know, for the first month or so. But then, so what is something, like you said, you feel like you're alone now that everybody's forgotten. What is something you feel like you would benefit from your support group?
For them to actually come to my house.
Yeah.
It seems like when they reach out, they want to do things. They want to do lunch or dinner or me to come hang out at their house or whatever. And that's fine. But for the first couple weeks, I just ran constantly going to everybody else.
Right.
Going to dinner with them, going to Urban Air and doing all these other things, which is great. But it would be nice for someone to come to my house, to sit with me at my house. And let me cry on them, let me grieve with them. But I think my friends, it's still very raw with them. And I don't think that they're ready to come to my house and not have Tim there.
Right.
They're not ready to deal with that end of it yet.
So do you feel like, would it be safe to say that the hard part for you still is being home by yourself?
At home at night.
Yeah.
Nighttime is the worst during the day. I can occupy myself. I can constantly do things. I have Aiden as a distraction.
Sure.
But the second he goes to bed and I'm sitting downstairs in Tim's man cave and I'm sitting in his chair and there's his pictures and there's his urn and that's when I struggle the most. That's when it becomes real that this is my life now. This is not going to change. But I now have to do everything on my own. Our house, we bought and we were going to kind of renovate, fix it up.
Yeah.
And I keep looking around and I know the plans we had for everything. And I feel like I have to make it the way that he wanted it, what he saw. He picked our house. You know, there was another one I liked a little bit better, but he really wanted this house. And I was like, okay, if this is what you really want. But I have to figure out how am I going to do this? How am I going to refinish the floors the way that he wanted? How am I going to put up the trim? And how am I going to change that light fixture? I don't know how to do that stuff. I think I'm going to have to find a good handyman or something to help me. But I just feel like I have to make it what he wanted and what he saw because he loved our house so much. And it's too big for just me and Aiden. But I can't imagine being anywhere else.
Right.
I can't leave that house. But it hurts to be there too.
Mm-hmm. Do you take any comfort in, you said his urn. Do you take comfort in him not being at a cemetery? I've always been curious about.
I don't, I know that he wanted to be cremated. That was kind of a loose conversation that we had had.
Right.
I would say yes, that it's nice that he's right there, because I talked to him. My husband had really gotten into mountain climbing lately.
Yeah.
He, for the past couple of years, had become obsessed with, like, Everest and K2, and he just would read all these books and watch these documentaries, and he got his sister really into it, and he decided he wanted to start high pointing. So he's going to the highest elevation in every state, him and his sister, and okay. Me and Aiden were tagging along.
Yeah.
So we had taken a really big trip in October, and we did Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina. I think that was it. I can't remember if I said Virginia. And we had planned another trip coming up this spring. And we were in Virginia, and what we thought was the top of Mount Rogers was not. he just kept saying, he's like, you know, I'm not the most religious person. He's like, but I feel like this is the closest to God and to be surrounded by nature and just to see all of this around me. It was a very spiritual experience for him. So my sister-in-law and myself and now Lucas are going to continue high pointing. And we're going to spread his ashes at the tops of the point so he can still do that. And we're going to go back to Virginia very specifically because he just loved it there so much.
So I know in working through any kind of huge life event like this, and I think it's safe to say that you experienced a trauma and you're currently still experiencing a trauma. And it's you appear to be a very proactive person. When, like, I don't even know where you would start with the coping of what you're experiencing. You know what I mean? Like, when you're, like, you know that the grieving process, you know how they say there's these stages of grieving and first you're angry or you're shocked and, like, how that works. But 2 months in, it doesn't seem like there should be any coping yet. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. you're still experience the rawness of that this is forever.
Yeah, I'm still in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. I'm still processing and trying to figure out what my next step is.
And sometimes that's literally like in the next minute. Like, how am I going to get through this next minute?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to start thinking about the future. You know, my income got cut in half when my husband passed. What I make, we would be okay, but my field isn't necessarily stable. You know, I manage two stores that we sell IU apparel and gift. We're based out of a bookstore. College textbooks is not a booming business anymore, to say the least.
Right.
You know, I have this concern about I have to provide now for my son on my own. I'm going to have to do something else. This is not going to last for me. So, you know, my thought is I'm going to have to go back and finish my college degree. Okay, so how do I do that? How do I go back to school? I can't work full-time and go to school full-time with my son. That is not an option for me. I have to be a parent. My parents have offered to help. They would continue to watching Aiden. My mother would when I'm in class, and they would help me financially where I come up short and let me stop working. So that's something I'm going to look into because I have to figure out how to care for him the best way possible. But then it's like, okay, I'm going back to school. What do I want to do?
Right.
That's a big life question right there, mm-hmm. that I'm trying to figure out in the middle of dealing with everyday life. You know, trying to figure out how to cook dinner and get it on the table when my son's being crazy and running all over the place, mm-hmm. and the dog scratching on the door trying to get out, and then he wants to come right back in. And, you know, how do I take a shower when Aiden wakes up? As soon as I'm up in the morning, it doesn't happen. If he's up when I'm up, then I'm not taking a shower that day. It just isn't possible. You know, how do I work and spend enough time with him and try to carve out 30 minutes to myself mm-hmm. after he goes to bed? But by the time he goes to bed, I'm exhausted and I want to go to bed. I don't want to stay up any later. I'm not doing terrible, I would say.
Yeah.
I'm managing. I think that's the best way to put it, that I'm getting up every day. I'm taking care of what I have to take care of. And that's about all that's happening. I'm keeping my house reasonably clean. My laundry is caught up. There is food in the fridge and Aiden isn't starving and I'm not. So I feel like that's an A for the day. You know,
that in itself is coping.
Yeah.
That is, it's just that daily routine that I assume is probably the hardest
yes.
to not have him a part of.
Yes. Just going to the bathroom.
Right.
And Aiden knowing he's on the first level and hoping he's not getting into something that he shouldn't be getting into.
Right.
It's the little things that you just don't even think about. And it's funny. It's the weirdest things that I miss about my husband. I'm not going to act like I had the perfect marriage. I did not. My husband and I had problems. You know, we actually had separated for about a month, about, I guess this is what, 3 years ago maybe at this point. And we did marriage counseling and we worked through our problems. And then as soon as we actually got back together is when I got pregnant. So we weren't perfect. And there were things about him that drove me crazy, like any couple. He was the messiest person I've ever met in my entire life making coffee. There would be coffee grinds on the counter. There'd be sugar. And then he'd get it wet. And then it was like concrete on the counter. And I'm scrubbing it off. I miss that. I wish I could scrub off that sugar from my counter and wipe down the cabinets where he spilled it every single day down my white cabinets. I miss the fact that he would leave the cabinet doors open all the time. That even though he was standing by the hamper, he threw his clothes on the floor. Those little things. I miss the way that he smelled. I miss the way that his hand fit in mine. And then the way that my body just lined perfectly with his. It's like we were meant to fit together. But when I cry every day, but the crying sessions are getting shorter. So I feel like that's an improvement. That's a step forward. I actually laugh some now, so that's good. I'm getting a little bit of a sense of humor back, so that's good. I can see something that's sports related and not instantly want to throw myself out a window. Because yeah. My husband was a huge sports fanatic. Our TV's always on ESPN. So I know that I'm getting little steps forward. But it's definitely a long, long road. And the steps are really small. But I try to stay positive that anything that's a little bit easier, anything that I'm starting to get a little bit of a pattern down to, is an improvement. Sorry.
Take your time. I get the impression that you haven't had this conversation with anyone.
No. I definitely, it's easier for me to focus on other people's feelings and with this situation to help, you know, other people grieve and deal and, you know, try to comfort them and, oh, Tim loved you so much and remind them of stories of the two of them. Or did you know he told me one time that it really meant a lot to him that you did X, Y, or Z? It's so much easier to help them and than to focus on myself and what I'm trying to deal with. I definitely am the good old denial girl.
Yeah.
It's easier to just not deal with the reality of the situation. But I know that I have to. I'm getting to that point now where I have to deal with this. I have to process because I'm going to have to move on at some point. And I know it's not right now. I'm definitely not ready, but I have to move on at some point. I can't cry every day for the rest of my life. That's not reasonable. To be honest, I thought I would have ran out of tears already. I mean, you can't. But evidently not. You evidently have an unlimited supply of tears. And I got to figure out how to just care for Aiden and be there for Lucas and at some point take a moment for myself. At some point, I'll figure that out. That's the hard one.
What's your biggest fear today?
That I will not raise my son to be the kind of man that my husband was. I don't want my son to forget, but I know he's going to. And I want to do the things that I know Tim would have wanted done with Aiden. I want to make sure that he plays sports. I want to make sure that he has the same drive that my husband had, that you don't give up, that you want to be a pitcher. Okay, you go outside and you throw every day, all day long, and you make it happen. That was how my husband was. You know, when he was in, he was all in. He was giving everything that he had, and I have to instill that into my son. I have to show him how to be a man, how to admit your faults and take responsibility for your actions. I'm just concerned about how this is all going to affect him. That he's going to have some major issues because I don't have the imagination that Tim did. That he's not going to have the same life experience that Lucas got. Tim went to everything with Lucas. He would literally drive 3 hours to watch Lucas run track for 10 seconds because he was running the 100, you know what I mean? And he would sit there for 3 hours to watch Lucas run 10 seconds. Aiden doesn't get to have that. And that sucks for my kid, you know? I feel like if I can focus everything on Aiden and make him the best person possible, that's the best way to honor my husband. But then I know what's going to happen is I'm going to be that clingy mom that nobody likes, who just puts their kid in bubble wrap. I don't want that either, but.
Do you have any, do you have any videos or voicemails or those types of things that you listen to or watch over and over?
I read the last text message that Tim sent me. I was at work and he said, "I love you, you sexy thing," or something. And I said, "I love you too, babe." And that was the last text message conversation we had, which I think is kind of perfect.
That's a good one to reread.
Yeah. Could have been a couple ones earlier, like, "Don't forget to bring coffee home."
Right.
There's a couple little videos of him playing with Aiden that I watch quite a bit. Him kind of tossing Aiden in the air, him coloring with Aiden. And I actually was able to find one of the pictures that he had colored with Aiden, and I framed it and put it in Aiden's room. He was such an amazing dad.
You're an amazing mother. I know that it has to be hard to think of all the things that Aiden's going to miss with Tim gone. But moms have this amazing way of stepping up even when they don't realize that they are. And I can feel how big your heart is across the table. And I know that, I mean, just in your words, how lost that you feel at this moment. But you deserve a lot more credit than you're giving yourself.
Well, I'm doing what I have to do. I don't have a choice.
Right. And people, that's one of the hardest things that I think it is to hear sometimes is, "I don't know how you do it." And yeah. I always want to say, I didn't know I had a choice.
Yeah, this is life. Yeah. This is what I was given. This is what I have to do.
Yeah.
There's no option here. I have to take care of him. I have to do these things. And it's amazing that, and like I said, I know I'm very guilty of, trying to take care of other people's needs. But like the things people say to you when this happens is just bizarre. And the things that they focus on is just crazy.
Uh-huh.
I have specifically one of Tim's aunts started calling me at like 9 o'clock at night for the first couple of weeks almost every night, and she would be half drunk and just going on about stuff. And then she would start talking to me about her personal problems, and I'm like, lady.
Oh, goodness.
And of course I would listen. Oh, Pam, I'm so sorry. I know. I just hope the best for you, and I hope things get better. And if there's anything I can do, you know, let me know, and I'm willing to help. But then I'm like, why am I saying that to you? My husband died a week ago. Why am I dealing with your problems? I had someone say to me, you know, I just hope you keep your heart open to love in the future, and that there's a man out there that will love you and love Aiden.
Oh, my goodness.
I was floored. I was like, why would you even think to say something like that so soon? And that right. was, that happened shortly after I had made the decision to make him DNR. That was still in the hospital, my husband.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. It's just crazy, the things that people think are comforting or right. appropriate to say right. or not.
Yeah.
Don't ask me if I'm okay, because you don't want the real answer.
Right, right.
No, I'm not okay. But of course, I'm going to lie. I'm going to smile.
Right.
And I'm going to say, we're holding on. We're doing okay. We're doing good. But that's not the truth.
Yeah.
I'm not okay. I'm barely keeping it together, but I'm keeping it together enough to make it through today.
Yeah. I found, and I don't know if I read it somewhere or where it was, but where people who had lost loved ones are like, the last thing I want to hear is I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
It's not your fault, and that's not what it is. But it's, so I've heard that it's actually, I'm sorry that you're suffering. I'm sorry that this experience happened. I feel compassion towards you, those types of things. Is there something that someone has said that you've gone, yes, thank you. Thank you for being a real human being and saying a real thing to me.
This fucking sucks.
There you go. Yeah.
It's like, yep, that is the correct answer to what's happening right now. One of the worst is, God has a plan. This happens for a reason. He closes a door and opens a window. Well, guess what? That doesn't help me right now. God's plan is not working for me right now.
Yeah.
That does not help. You know, that takes me to, okay, well, what did I do that was so wrong that I deserved it, that I deserved this? What did my husband do that was so wrong that he deserved this? What did my son do that he deserves to grow up without a father? Don't tell me this is God's plan.
Right.
It may be, but you don't need to say that to me.
Mm-mm. At all. That's the last thing I want to hear.
Yeah.
Because if he had this plan, I would have liked for him to have consulted me yeah. on my life. And or,
oh, the other good one is, he'll never give you more than you can bear.
That is a good one. Did you, were you a religious person? Are you a religious person?
I would say spiritual. I definitely have beliefs. I'm not the go to church every Sunday person. I think the Bible is a nice guideline of how you should be a good person.
Uh-huh.
I believe that there is a God, there is a higher being, but I don't think that you need to go to church to be a good person.
Right.
You can see God in everything around you, you know, and I see it in my son when he smiles and laughs, when there's a beautiful day, when, you know, I go through a day and it's a good day. That's, you know, mm-hmm. So I have my beliefs, but I wouldn't say I'm a religious person necessarily.
Is there something spiritual that you've done regularly to help comfort you or to ease any of this? I mean, like, I know people are like, well, do you pray? Are you praying? Do you pray? You know, and I'm not saying that to you, but what have you?
I talk a lot. I think I'm talking to Tim, and sometimes it's, I miss you, and sometimes it's yelling.
Yeah.
Because I'm just angry. Mm-hmm. It's, why, you know, why did this happen? What is coming? What good is coming from this? Like, why do I need to suffer this way?
I've heard the power of speaking things out loud, and this is a very new concept to me. And there's people that even take it as far as like talking to themselves in the mirror and saying these things out loud, like things that you're carrying around. Like, if you want to say how pissed off you are, then you just put it out there. Just say it. Say it as many times as you need to say it. So I feel like it's probably very therapeutic at times to yell and scream and to just, instead of always trying to keep your composure because obviously your son, you don't want him to go, ma, what's going on? You know? So, but yeah, the when the, you do have those moments that you can just let loose and.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to hold it together until I get him to bed. And then it's like, okay, so this is my minute to just say what I need to say, do what I need to do. I tried journaling. That was not for me.
Not for you. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Have you found any books or anything that you felt were, or blogs or websites? I know it sounds silly, but in this day and age, you can't just say books because that's not the first place people go anymore.
I've read a couple books. I've not found one that I feel like has been really right for me. Mm-hmm. I kind of looked into doing like some grief counseling therapy things. And where I live, you have to like call and make a reservation and this whole thing. And I was a little too much for me to kind of deal with right now when I have all of these other things I'm trying to do. Like I have to get everything switched into my name from the house and we've got two cars. I've got to get rid of one. So I'm dealing with all of these little things. The thought of setting up another appointment and having another place have to be at a specific time is kind of a little much right now. But I think maybe in the future that'll be something that I'll look into a little bit more. Maybe if I can share with someone who has gone through similar and find out what has helped them.
Right.
Maybe that'll help me somehow.
Right. It feels like there people would benefit from like the drop in grief counseling. Like, you know, when there's, because it comes in waves there, like you said, there's moments where you're like, I'm okay. I've got it together. I'm okay. And then there's probably other moments where you're like, I have got to, and you want something constructive back and you're not getting that. Like you said, like your family is still grieving and there's no one to say, hey, Maybe try this or maybe do this. Do you think you're at a point to accept suggestions or do you still just know that you need to feel this grief?
I'm open to suggestions. I don't want to be the grieving widow forever. Mm-hmm. I don't want that role. I'm not comfortable in this position at all. I'm typically a very upbeat person. I'm very positive typically. And so this is just very hard for me to just be every day of just sad.
Yeah.
That's just not something that I'm comfortable with at all. So I'm definitely open to suggestions. And I was hoping that they would, I don't know how grief counseling works. I thought it'd be kind of like AA. They have weekly meetings. You just pop in, say, hi, my name's Amanda.
Right. I feel like, that actually sounds like it would be much more beneficial.
But yeah, when I was looking online, the one in my area, you have to like call and make a reservation.
And do the whole thing. Yeah.
It's just like, this is a little more than what I can do right now.
Right. And sometimes those tasks, that something that was probably very minor before, seems incredibly overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is, it seems like there might be a little bit of fear in taking that step and going, okay, now I'm at the point where I'm ready to experience some grief counseling and move through this. Because as you move through it, you realize he's been gone for 2 months and then it's 3 months and then it's 4 months. And it's not that you want to feel further away from him, but as time passes, you get further away from the last time you were with him and he was alive. And those, I feel like that's probably that would make me hesitant and wanting to go, I don't want to move through this yet.
Yeah. I've kind of been doing that with getting things switched to my name.
Right.
It's like once I take his name off the house, then it's gone. It's done. You know, once I get rid of the extra car, you know, it's a big step to take. And I know I'm getting to the point because you only have a certain time period where you have to get it all done. And I'm starting to creep up on that. And I know I have to start doing it, but I was using the excuse of, well, it just happened. Well, okay, now it's, you know, Christmas. All right, well, it's the new year and places are closed, you know. But I'm running out of excuses. And I know I'm going to have to just suck it up and just do it. But I don't really want to. But I have to. Yeah. And that's where daily life is. I do what I have to do. Because I don't have options anymore. And I know it's going to get easier, the therapy says. It'll be okay. It'll get easier with time. I know that.
Intellectually, you know
but
that.
But I don't feel that.
Yeah.
I'm still very much in the middle of it. But I know little things. Like I said, I get little moments where I'm like, okay, this is good. This is a positive thing. Okay, I'm going to go back to school. Okay. That's a good thing. That's going to secure a better future. So that's a step forward. Mm-hmm. But man, I said, yes, I'm going to do this. Okay, well, now I have to actually take that step to go get registered and do all of this.
That process, yeah. Yeah.
And then the thought of not working actually gives me anxiety.
Sure.
I've had a job since I was 18. You know, I've always worked and I've always been very independent. You know, I took over all of my bills and I've always paid for everything myself. And the thought of having to rely on someone else financially gives me a little bit of anxiety, to be honest.
Sure.
I know it's my parents and I know that they want to help and I know they have the means to help me, that I'm not going to put them in a bad position by doing this. But the thought of having to ask my parents at the age of 32 for money to help with bills is just not something I'm really okay with.
Right.
But I know that this is a short-term situation to make me better in the long run.
Right.
So I'm going to have to just suck it up and put my big girl panties on and do what I need to do.
What have you learned about yourself since Tim died?
Well, I learned that I can make decisions quicker than I thought I would have to. You know, I've always been kind of the indecisive one. You ask me what's for dinner. Oh, I don't know. Maybe this. But when it comes to it, when it came down to like the details of his funeral, I was very decisive on this, and this. This is how we're going to do this. I can be a single mom. I didn't think that would be something I would ever have to deal with, but like I said, my kid's happy, he's healthy, so I think I'm acing that one right now, so that's good. I think I've always been a compassionate person, and I think that I have been helping other people grieve through this, even if it means I'm neglecting myself, but I am helping other people get through this. So I think that's a good thing. I don't know.
That's good. No, that all makes sense. And, but I do feel like that would be, because when you rely on a spouse for specific things, like you said, that's the yin to your yang, and that's a part of it. And so, like those reminders when you do have to, okay, you know what, this is what we're having for dinner, this is what we're doing right now, and those are little reminders too that you get to encompass everything that you and Tim were and present it to Aiden now. And I know that's not the ideal scenario, but that you can do that.
Right. Yeah, I can make it work. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my thing. When I say at work, like, hey, we'll make it work. That's what we do. Right. We'll figure this out. And that's exactly what I do. I make it work. I make it work to the best of my ability with everything that's going on.
Yeah. So what is your, right now, you've said that you're going to probably return to school and things like that. But is there something in your future, you know, that maybe in the next year that you're going, okay, I want to get this done?
I want to continue. We're going to continue high pointing,
right?
Like I mentioned, shortly after his funeral, actually the week after, we went and did Ohio to get one done and just have that moment. So we're planning another trip this spring. We're going to try to go to Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida.
Okay.
Then we're planning another one in July, I believe, to do Michigan, Wisconsin, and Illinois. So if I can do that and just can force myself to continue on, because the high pointing was not something that I was passionate about.
Right.
Like, I'm cool with it. It's fun. But like when you're talking about going to like Denali and it's cold, I don't like that. I'm not excited about the thought of being in, you know, negative 30 degrees or whatever it is. So trying to force myself to continue doing this, I want to try to just keep Aiden as happy and as healthy as I can, and just to try to, especially since at some point I will start doing school, try to spend more time with him one-on-one since I won't be working full-time. And then just to try to continue to foster my relationship with Lucas. I want to focus on making sure that he knows that I'm still here, even though his dad isn't, that I'm still a part of his life, that I still love him, and that I still want him to be around, and his room is still there and will always be there. Yeah. So just focus on my family. And you know, I still am in constant contact with my in-laws. You know, try to keep that relationship strong because Aiden needs them. I need them too, you know. And just kind of keep calm and carry on.
Yeah, there you go. Amanda, I am so grateful that you reached out to me and were willing to share this story. And I hope that somehow this was therapeutic for you and that you gained something from it, because I know it couldn't have been easy to just sit here and talk to a stranger about such a massive event in your life.
Well, you know, sometimes it's actually easier to talk to someone who doesn't know versus the people who are actually invested in the situation.
Sure.
So I just appreciate you actually contacting me back and letting me come and share my story with you. So thank you for that.
What I learned from this episode with Amanda is that presence is a powerful tool in grief. Just being there. You can cook the food and you can pick up the dry cleaning and all of those things are good and fine. But actually just being present when someone you care about is grieving is probably what they want the most. Amanda and I spoke off the air a little bit after the podcast was over, and she did. She talked about how much it meant when a friend would come over and maybe even not spend quality time with her per se, but just let her take a shower, or coming over to the house and just sitting with her son long enough for her to run to the grocery store for 20 minutes. So maybe the next time you consider asking someone, hey, do you want to go here? Do you want to do this? Or do you want to meet us here? Maybe just call them and say, can I come to you? Let me come to you. Do you want to talk? Can I bring food to your house? I'll stop and get coffee. Or, hey, I'm on my way home from work. Let me come by and help with anything. Presence is powerful. Use your presence for good. Don't be that person that walks into the room and people go, oh, you know. But that's another podcast, right? I want to continue to have these guests and these stories and share what people are going through and how, even on their worst day, things aren't terrible. Or sometimes they are terrible and you're moving through it and you're trying to get to a place where it's not terrible anymore. It's all a process and embracing the process. So thank you so much to Amanda for sharing such a personal story. If anybody has any suggestions for her, maybe books or other podcasts, other things that you have done while grieving the loss of a loved one, please feel free to share with me, and I will definitely pass those along to her. Also, you will be very happy to hear that I finally have an email address for Not Terrible. It is notterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to email me anytime. Share guest suggestions or topics, books, blogs, anything that you think that Not Terrible would be interested in, please share at notterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and the Off the Air podcast. recorded in the Front Room Studios. This has been a Waco production.